All right, fans, we're joined by one of our favorite guests, and that is Barry Bloom, a senior writer for Forbes.com, among others, and a resident of Arizona as well, like me, a prisoner in Arizona, like me. Barry, how are you?
Good. Well, you know, I'd hardly call it a prisoner. I mean, we're kind of in a bubble here. Beautiful weather, fairly safe, you know, nice homes that we're in. Could be a lot worse.
Yeah, it could be. You just don't want to leave your house too many times. That's the whole deal. But, you know, it's fun chatting with you during the week and, of course, following you on what you write at Forbes.com. And you and I haven't really talked on the air about baseball and where it could be going and the leaks of the last couple of weeks of the possibilities and the players with their salaries and all that. And you're someone who's always been very close to those kinds of issues. And we really haven't had you on to talk about that. So let's start there. Give me your thoughts on a little bit of Arizona baseball, where the players are at, and where you see this thing going.
Well, I don't think there's really much new about that since that proposal was floated a couple of weeks ago. And then you had the additional thing about maybe doing it in Florida and Arizona. But I think that's a non-starter because you know, the disease is snowballing a bit in Florida. I don't think it's a great idea. You know, the more I look at it and, you know, the more people I talk to, where we are is that, you know, players get paid out of a pool until May 31st. Everybody has their jobs at their teams, at the website, in the commissioner's office until May 31st. Yeah, emails have gone out from the commissioner to people to that effect. I think if they don't have a way to get this started by June 1st, then we're just not going to have a season. And when you look at where everything is around the rest of the country, you know, New York, you're not going to play in New York. You're not going to play probably in Florida. You're not going to play in Boston, Illinois, Washington, California. There's just too many places where you're not going to be able to play a game this year, and I don't even think you can play a game without a crowd. So I'm very pessimistic about where it's going to go right now.
All right. Well, being here in Arizona, and of course we have nice weather now. Next week it's supposed to be in the 90s, and we know it's coming over the summer. That's a hurdle as well. But I'm glad to check in with you on it. You know, because we haven't really chatted about it, and I know you're close to a lot of the sources of Major League Baseball. So, all right, that is Barry Bloom, Forbes.com. You wrote a column today about the Hall of Fame, and, of course, makes total sense. Even though there are not many cases up in Cooperstown, up in northern New York, but it sounds to me like the Hall of Fame induction ceremony is probably going to be canceled for this year and melded into 2021.
Yeah, the only thing I could see them doing as an option is, you know, pushing it off to October when it's fall up there and the weather is not too cold yet. Anything beyond that, I think, would be it would be too cold in Cooperstown to have, you know, that kind of event. But I think, you know, with talking to, you know, Tim Mead today and John Shepistosky yesterday, I think their consideration is that, you know, how are you going to bring 55,000 people into that area anytime in the near future and not put a lot of people at risk because you're having people come in from the rest of the state where there is a real quagmire of this disease basically going on. So, again, you know, I think it's no Hall of Fame induction and you just meld it together in whoever gets in next year and have the two together.
Well, this has happened before at the Hall of Fame. I mean, during World War II, they've had that happen, and there's been some gaps in years of inductions in that. So it's not the end of the world to do it, but it makes perfect sense because, again, even if things are going in the greatest direction, you're asking for Derek Jeter and 50,000 or 80,000 people would love to be there. And that would create a problem.
Yeah, from my research, they have had a Hall of Fame induction ceremony every year since 1943. 1943 was the last year, and that was in the middle of the war. I didn't have one in 40 and 41 because baseball writers didn't vote. And I think that's what also hatched the Veterans Committee, so that if the baseball writers didn't have a vote to nominate and elect players to the Hall. And then, you know, people, that's changed so many times that, you know, people don't realize that the Veterans Committee voted in people who were, you know, very young players at the time, unlike today, where, you know, you're really voting in people from different eras every time the whole concept changes. So it's a rarity, but like you said, it's been done. And the first three classes were elected in 36 to 38 before the museum was opened. And they inducted the first four classes all at once in 39 when the museum opened. It's not going to be the worst thing in the world, especially next year where you have a very limited ballot too, and you may not have too many people coming out of these golden era and long-term committees, and baseball writers may not even elect somebody next year.
Boy, Barry Bloom with us. You've been close to the Yankee situation for years. A couple of things that touched me this week. One is this is the anniversary today, actually, of the opening of the original Yankee Stadium. Babe Ruth hit a home run, and thousands of people there, and there was, obviously the Yankees were kicked out of the Polo Grounds. The Giants didn't want them anymore, so they built their own stadium across the river from the Polo Grounds. But I assume you were in the old Yankee Stadium. You're in the renovated Yankee Stadium and the new Yankee Stadium. Give me some of your memories about Yankee Stadium.
Well, you know, what I call the original Yankee Stadium, that's where I saw my first baseball game when I was a kid. My father took me there in 1960 to my first couple of games. You know, I saw Cleveland in the middle of the summer and then a doubleheader with Cleveland later in the year. I saw Terry Francona's dad, the original Tito, hit a couple of home runs in a game against the Yankees. You remember because – you know, you're a little older than me, but back in those days, when you grew up and you just watched whatever baseball games you were watching on TV in black and white, when you walked into that stadium and you saw the green expanse of the field and all the colors around you, it was startling. It's a lot different now than a kid who watches a big screen TV with the scope and color and contrast that you get at the games on television, and then you go to the ballpark, and it's kind of a comparable event. And to me, back then, it was just beautiful. You know, so the two I remember, you know, the two games I remember the most are, you know, those two, and then the third is I was at the Polo Grounds. My father took me to the Polo Grounds with my brother and a bunch of people. The first game, the Giants came back to play the Mets in 1962, and that was just a raucous game. It was the first time I saw Mays live, and, you know, he hit a home run, and McCovey hit two, and Davenport hit one of these home runs down the right field line, a grand slam, 230 feet. I had an uncle who went to the game as a Giants fan. He said, all he wanted to do was see Mays run out from under his cap, make a basket catch, and hit a home run, and he did all three. It was fabulous. But you know, the stadium to me really meant, you know, Mantle in those years and Whitey Ford. And Mantle was my favorite, and he just did spectacular things every time I went to the stadium.
We spent a lot of time talking about Yogi Berra tonight. There's a new book that's coming out about him that we hope to have the author on next couple of weeks. But Yogi was really the guy. And, you know, all the top four finishes and MVP and all that kind of stuff. But it's funny, you said Ford and Mantle because they got all the publicity. But Yogi, Casey Stengel always said, that's the guy that that I needed was Yogi.
I don't think it had anything to do with the publicity. You love to watch Ford pitch, and I'd love to see Mantle play. You know, Yogi was obviously very, you know, instrumental in everything they did. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that, you know, I think Berra went to the World Series 14 times, Mantle went 12, Ford a number of those was on a number of those teams, but the only three players off of all those teams from 1947 to 1964, and the Yankees missed 2 years or 3 years in the World Series from 1947 to 1964, and the only three guys in the Hall of Fame are Ford, Barra, and Mantle. Now remember, Barra didn't finish his career with the Yankees; he finished his career with the Mets. So, you know, he was kind of a great player, a little roly-poly. You know, he didn't have the dimension or, you know, the pizzazz that Mantle and Ford have, had. But obviously, a tremendous player and a great baseball guy.
Oh,
and a
absolutely.
Lot smarter than he was made. A lot smarter than he was made out to be by Joe Garagiola, who really crafted a whole image of him to the public that, in some ways, I think didn't really exist.
Today is the anniversary of Jackie Robinson hitting his first home run for the Montreal Royals against the Jersey City Giants at Roosevelt Stadium in a very famous picture of crossing the plate. And George Shuba, his teammate, shakes his hand the first time an African-American had homered in a game, and the white player was there to congratulate him. Very famous picture. I say, and you and I have touched on Jackie many times, but when you think about why it happened then with Jackie, and of course Branch Rickey, Lee Loewenfish has written beautiful books about Branch Rickey. What's the essence of that moment for you when you think of Jackie breaking the color line in the International League, then of course with the Dodgers in 1947? We just passed that anniversary this past Wednesday.
Well, you know, I wrote a column about Rachel the other day, who I absolutely adore. I've known her for many, many years, obviously. You know, Jackie had died by the time, way before I even broke into the business. So I never got to really see Jackie play, except for the old kinescopes. And, you know, I found that to be a real hole. And I wrote in this column that if I had anything I'd want to do or any place I'd want to be in Major League Baseball that I could roll back time, and it would be to be in Ebbets Field that day in 1947 on April 15th to see him come out and play first base for the Dodgers. And really, as a sports writer, to cover that whole year and that whole era, I mean, the 51 season must have been an incredible season to cover with Jackie playing for the Dodgers and, you know, the Giants coming back from 11 or 12 games back and the Thompson home run. I mean, the old ballparks, taking trains around the country, traveling around the country, every one of those ballparks. It just must have been, you know, a great, great era to be in. I think significantly that, you know, Robinson, what he did, he was way ahead of the civil rights movement in the U.S. He beat the desegregation of the military. He beat Brown versus Board of Education. He long beat the civil rights legislation. You know, Martin Luther King. He's what got it started. And if you go back to where, you know, Rickey was able to do this, you know, there was legislation passed in New York State and New York City in the mid-1940s after the war, which basically said that you could not discriminate in jobs, particularly in civic jobs, by color, race, or religion. And Rickey used that as the ability and the crux of the fact that he was ready to build a team that had African-American ball players on it. And he wasn't stupid. I mean, the whole neighborhood around both the Polo Grounds and Ebbets Field was changing. It was becoming, it was turning over from being white, Irish, and Italian to black and Hispanic. They knew they needed to survive in both places, that they needed to start breaking the color line and bring African-American players in just for the survival of the franchises. And even that, once it was done, it only helped with them getting Joe Black and Newcomb and Jackie, Campanella, a number of other players, then the Giants following suit with, you know, Mays and Monty Irvin, Thompson. There was those teams really needed to desegregate, and basically it gave them another 10 years in New York, or they probably would have been gone long before that in those old ballparks and in those neighborhoods.
Boy, great review, Barry Bloom. One last thing before we let you go on this Saturday night. 2008, it is the anniversary of a 22-inning game at Petco Park. And I know you covered the Padres for a while. I'm just asking, were you there that 6 hours, 16 minutes for the 22-inning game at Petco on this date in 2008?
No, fortunately, I was not. And I'm not sure that unless I had to stay there and write a game story that I would have been there for the entire game anyway.
6 hours, 16 minutes. And Matt Vasgersian, I heard him talk about it today. Well, that's a little bit of baseball history. Barry, always great to have you on as well. What are you writing about this week? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things in the can that I'm working on. We'll see what happens as the month transpires, and we're going to start to pretty much learn where this is going outside the rumor stage of how Major League Baseball is going to come back if it's able to come back at all. And I think that as we get into May, that's going to be the major story. I think if I remember correctly, the last date that Manfred put on it was May 15th. So by May 15th, we should have some sort of information on whether we're going to be able to have baseball back or not. I'm sure they're going over multitudes of scenarios with both the players' union and, the owners to basically figure this out at this point, if it's doable at all.
All right, we'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks. Be safe, and you're an Arizonan like me, so let's enjoy what we have down here so far. So take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Barry.
Yeah, thank you, Marty. Thanks for having me on.
All right, anytime. Barry Bloom of Forbes.com. More coming up, KMBR 680, 104.5 on this Saturday night, the Sports Leader.